In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Longtime listeners of iSpy Radio may remember the story Sheriff Gil Gilbertson told us about growing up in a timber county versus what we have now. Back in 2014, when we interviewed him, his county, Josephine County, was facing bankruptcy because federal payments in lieu of timber had ended and Congress was arguing about what to do. But while they were debating, the county coffers were short by $7.5 million every year. Despite slashing budgets, despite slashing jobs, despite cutting everything they could, everything except cutting timber. You see, his county had resources. 67% of Josephine County was federal lands, some of the best timber-growing soils and conditions on the planet. They just weren't allowed to touch them, thanks to Bill Clinton and his plan to save forests by not cutting them or manage them. All this to protect habitat for the spotted owl, a bird that wasn't even a native species to Oregon. So instead of jobs that produced income and taxes, the federal government decided to shut down forests and pay people not to work. And counties got a special payout known as payment in lieu of timber. What it was federal welfare for counties, to replace the income they used to get when people logged federal or state lands. At the time of Oregon statehood, the state school fund had been set up so schools got a portion of sales of timber from state lands. The O&C lands, previously owned by railroad lines, were ceded to the state, and sales from timber on those lands also went to schools and roads and essential services like fire and police. And the great thing about that arrangement was it meant the state did not have to raise taxes on other people who were working elsewhere. It meant they didn't need a sales tax because the timber paid for so much of government. And it was money generated by people working, who were also paying taxes into the state. And the forests that were cut grew back and could be harvested decades later. It was a perpetual money machine. Money literally grew on trees. Until far-left activists and environmentalists who see mankind as a blight on the earth convinced Bill Clinton and Al Gore, neither of whom really needed convincing, to shut down timber harvests to save a bird. So timber companies went out of business. Mills shut down. Foresters who replanted trees went out of business. Machine shops that service those industries shut down. And others besides. These were good, well-paying jobs you could raise families on and have money left over to spend. But people with no jobs don't pay taxes. People without jobs can't afford homes and don't pay property taxes. With no jobs, people moved away. Businesses that follow prosperity and spring up in areas with good jobs also went away. Stores and offices closed. Schools lost students. Schools lost money from students leaving and the direct payments from timber they used to get. Once proud and prosperous areas like Josephine County were turned to beggars. Begging the state for money to keep up essential services, begging the federal government for the handouts Congress promised. Areas that wanted to work, that loved to work, were reduced to whatever the government allowed them to have. When we interviewed Sheriff Gilbertson in January 2014, his county had been suffering for two decades under Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan. At the time we talked to him, they'd been reduced to himself and six deputies. 23 out of 29 deputies had been laid off. And those six remaining were only allowed to work 8 hours Monday through Friday. That's it. For a county with some 84,000 residents and over 1,600 square miles. When we talked, Josephine County had already made national news for a horrible reason. A woman had called 911 to plead for help because her violent ex-boyfriend was trying to break in. But due to the budget cuts, the operator said she didn't have anyone to send to help her. And the best the operator could do was to suggest to the woman, ask him to leave. The man broke in and brutally raped her. I asked Sheriff Gilbertson what things were like back when they were allowed to harvest timber. You could hear him brighten as he remembered for us how it used to be. Schools had full academic programs, science, art, sports, music, and band. And these rural schools had all that at a time when big city schools were cutting back or even eliminating programs. The roads the buses traveled on to and from school were pristine, smooth as glass, he said. But now, his voice changed. The roads were terrible, rutted with potholes. The schools had cut programs, had to let teachers go. Things were so bad, teachers were sneaking food into some kids' backpacks because they weren't sure if they were getting any food at home. This is the damage government does when it controls things, when it controls people, when it controls the land and businesses. It doesn't just stop prosperity. It doesn't just steal money from people. Government doesn't just rob them of their livelihood. It robs them of their dignity and steals their spirit. And they will continue to do so unless and until people stand up and stop this. We'll be back with Jennifer Hammaker after this to continue our talk from last week about the Oregon Department of Forestry's plan to once again shut down even more of the forests. Jennifer Hammaker is a sixth-generation Oregonian whose family has a long history in natural resources, including fishing and the timber industries. She is the president of Oregon Natural Resources Industries, or ONRI, ONRI, an organization dedicated to protect Oregon's natural resources industries and the people who work in them. Jennifer, it's great to talk to you again. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I can't wait.
You know, in my opener there, I was talking about how the forests were shut down thanks to the spotted owl fiasco. Were you around for that? I mean, what was that like, seeing people you knew, people in your own family thrown out of work, or witnessing an entire industry that your family was working in just wiped out over the sake of a bird?
Yes, that was extremely difficult to swallow. We knew it was a surrogate. The Endangered Species Act was being used to shut down our forest. It was being abused, and it continues to be abused to shut down our forest. What we saw in, so my grandpa is Aaron Jones. He started Seneca Sawmill, and he considers himself the true environmentalist. He's passed away in 2014, but his legacy has been carried on through our family. And we all consider ourselves environmentalists. We love and protect the forest and the wildlife and clean water and clean air and everything that any normal Oregonian would do. So the spotted owl forced the timber industry to pivot, and a lot of people lost their jobs. We've seen increased homelessness, increased drug addiction, increased businesses closing down in rural Oregon. I think Oregon ranks among the top states with the highest use of drugs for marijuana, opioids, and
methamphetamines. Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
you could say that if you'd been on it.
Yeah, exactly. We have one of the highest percentages of homeless populations in the country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, just to give you kind of an idea, NORPAC, 100-year company, Stimson, started in the 1850s. Roseburg Forest Products, 1930, Swanson Group, 1952, Georgia Pacific, Coos Bay Mills, 25 years old, Bi-Mart, 60 years old. These all have been led, having to either downsize or shut down because of no timber available.
Yeah.
So, and the timber has been shut down, even though they are all located amongst these gorgeous, beautiful, huge, vast forests.
Mm-hmm.
They can't touch them.
Yeah, yeah.
So these are multi-generational businesses that have fallen to the wayside because of this. And every year we see the fires
yep.
getting more and more devastating, longer fire seasons, all this kind of stuff. And the more timber you pack into an acre, the less water there is. It absorbs tremendous amounts of water. So you talk about drought. Well, you want to mitigate climate change. Stop burning our forests down.
That's right.
Stop, you know, start thinning our forests.
That's right.
Start managing our forests.
Yep. Yep.
Otherwise, we're going to continue to see this.
Exactly right. Yeah, we've said that so often here, is that if you truly believe that global warming is making the forest drier, well, then you should be doing more to manage them, not less. And unfortunately, the latter is what the state has decided to do. So last week, we had touched on the Oregon Department of Forestry's Habitat Conservation Plan. This week, I want to dig a little bit deeper into that to help people understand and what an HCP is and how it will impact real people. And we'll get back to some of those stories that I'm sure you've got to share. A quick definition, a habitat conservation plan is a voluntary plan or agreement available to landowners under the Federal Endangered Species Act to protect wildlife species and the ecosystems on which they depend. Basically, it's an agreement between a landowner and regulators where some activity, human activity, is allowed, recognizing that there may be some incidental takes, in other words, deaths of the species under protection. So, you know, in my opinion, the effect is still that the government has a final say of what happens and what a landowner is generously allowed to do. Is there anything you could add to that definition, or is that pretty much it?
Well, so, you know, take of endangered or threatened species is prohibited under the ESA, which is the Endangered Species Act. The Endangered Species Act defines take as to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or attempt to engage in any such conduct. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service defines harm as significant habitat modification that actually kills or injures at least a listed species through impairing essential behavior such as breeding, feeding, or sheltering. So basically, when they say that it's a habitat conservation area or a riparian conservation area, it is off limits, period, end of sentence. If you go in there and you disturb their critical nesting or their critical, what they deem as critical habitat, that is a violation of this. So hunting, fishing, huckleberry picking, going out and harvesting mushrooms, it is in direct conflict to this.
So what is or are the species that are allegedly in danger that the ODF's plan is supposed to be protecting?
Well, there's 17 listed species. There's, I think, over 60 non-listed species. They go from mammals to fish to amphibians to grass, all of the above. So, but the top four that they're using is the spotted owl, again, the marble murrelet, again, the coho, even though they're at abundant, historic abundance levels, especially in the places that they're going to be closing down the forest, which is up in Tillamook and Clatsop County. They're at historic abundance levels, so much so that they're issuing permits to fish them. But they're going to keep them on that ESA so they can close down our forest.
Well, that's a little ironic.
So, and the red tree vole. So those are the four big ones that they're using. But there are 13 others besides that, like the salamander and the spotted thing and this and that and whatever. So there's a lot of them on here that they're protecting. I don't know why they've done that. The spotted owl could close it all down. One animal could close it all down, but they're put all of these on there. So I don't know what their angle is.
It is curious, but just real quick, a habitat conservation plan is supposed to allow some level of human activity. Does this particular HCP really not allow that human activity?
Right. Well, so yes, HCPs are supposed to make it so that, for instance, the private forest accord, is creating an HCP to put on private timberland. The private timberland will be off limits, and the federal government will be invited onto your private timberland now so they can survey and look at and research and all this kind of stuff, your timberland. An HCP is supposed to be there so that the environmental groups, close down our forest, but also so that they're not supposed to sue us. Whereas in the private forest accord, that's what they said. Oh, well, they can't sue us anymore. So this is really great. We don't have to play these battles back and forth and be held hostage for decades from the environmental groups. We can go ahead and do our harvest. We do mitigation for, you know, forest fires. We do mitigation for making sure that we're protecting the wildlife and everything and the water, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The thing is that's already being done.
Yeah.
That is
actually
a part of the forest practice.
Let me interrupt you there, because that private timber accord has a lot of history to it, which I think really led to this. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Jennifer Hammaker of ONRI. And welcome back. We're talking with Jennifer Hammaker, the president of ONRI, that's ONRI, Oregon Natural Resources Industries, an organization dedicated to protect Oregon's natural resource industries and the people who work in them. Find out more about them and this critical fight ahead by heading to ONRI, ONRI.us. So, Jennifer, I want to back up a little bit. So just to be clear, does the HCP allow for human activity or doesn't it?
Well, it's convoluted. The HCP does not really go into who is allowed specifically on these critical habitat areas or these riparian habitat areas. However, it's only a part of the puzzle. So ODF, the Oregon Department of Forestry, through a directive from the Board of Forestry, is creating a new forest management plan, an FMP. In that forest management plan is where they directly say what can and can't be done on their state forest. So that is where they will say, you know, no huckleberries being harvested, no fishing off the banks, no hunting on this property, no human activity. The HCP does not address it, but the FMP will.
Hmm. So you had mentioned last week and also in the last segment there about the private forest accord. And I remember when this happened, I'm sure there's more than one, but back during the first Timber Unity rally that had shut down the Capitol, there was this backdoor deal that happened.
Yes.
Where the timber companies and some legislators got together and essentially worked out a deal behind closed doors. And as I recall thinking at the time, you know, that just totally sold out all the people that had gone there to protest on your behalf. So am I remembering right. all that correctly? And if so, then what did they get out of that deal?
Well, so in 2019, when the walkouts happened and Timber Unity had that big rally down there, they stopped the cap and trade. And I guess that was the main thing. But we had been, Timber Unity was working hand in hand with legislators and all the people behind the scenes to try to stop cap and trade. When the private forest accord happened, when we first heard about it, and this is crazy because Seneca was a part of it, what happened was Kate Brown and Nick Blosser, who was her chief of staff, called 13 environmental groups and 13 timberland owners and got them together to sign a MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, that basically called a ceasefire for 18 months, saying that they were going to negotiate on two things, riparian buffers and aerial spray. Fast forward for 18 months, 2 years, and what has happened is we've got a private forest accord that was passed through legislature under a supermajority. So there's three bills, SB 1501, 1502, and HB 4055. Those three bills made up the private forest accord. The private forest accord literally smacks an HCP on all private timberland. So if you own timberland, I don't care if it's 5 acres or if it's 500,000, you're going to have HCP along your streams, your waterways, your lakes, your ponds, your any kind of water at all. You're going to have an HCP put around that, meaning that the federal government can come and check on it. You can't harvest it. It devalues your property. It devalues what you've invested your money and generations in. Are the timber companies happy about this? Well, the answer to that is the environmentalists are elated.
Hmm. This just doesn't even sound remotely legal, that you can have just a few acres of land and suddenly the federal government can come in and spy on everything that you're doing. Anyway, setting that aside for a moment, as far as these timber companies that essentially had agreed to that ceasefire, you know, they had the momentum on their side and they pulled back and agreed to this ceasefire. I assume they have to feel pretty betrayed right now.
I'm sure that they do. I actually know that they do. There's several of them that do. But there's, you know, their side of it is that it was protecting their investment. The environmental groups could no longer hold them hostage. Well, nothing in the legislation, nothing in the accord says that the environmentalists can't sue timber companies or mills or logging companies or the state. It doesn't say that. So yes, they can still do it, and they are still doing it. So, you know, yeah, I'm sure that they do feel betrayed. And also, when you have 13 timberland companies and 13 environmental groups making up 26 entities sitting at the table negotiating for what they want versus 60,000 Oregon timberland owners, those 26 people do not represent 60,000 timberland owners. So I feel it's a betrayal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely it is. So we want to talk to you, especially this week, about the impacts this is going to have on people. And as we discussed last week, this habitat conservation plan is going to take 634,000 acres offline. It will cut off more than 222 current beneficiaries of timber funds, which includes schools and public safety and lots more. Can you share with our audience what people, businesses, and organizations have told you will happen to them if this goes through and how it's going to impact their businesses or jobs?
Well, just as a reference here, so Tillamook County, they annually, every single year, they average about, $20 million a year from ODF land, from state timber harvest, okay? $20 million a year. Washington County is about $14 million a year. We've got Columbia County at about $4 million a year. we have these counties that are dependent on this timber revenue are for everything from ambulances to 911 dispatchers, law enforcement, rural law enforcement, you know, fire departments, schools. And then the other thing that people need to know is that taxing districts, okay, taxing districts are inside of the counties, but they rely directly for that timber harvest revenue to operate their taxing districts, whereas like Jewel and Elsie and Vernonia, those little tiny schools that are out there, they're not going to have time to pivot and redo their budget. I think it was Jewel School is going to be losing half of their revenue, which means immediately. When they close down these woods, it's immediate. They don't get that timber harvest revenue anymore. So they don't have time to pivot and try to, you know, redo their budget.
So they're going to lose that school. You mentioned these schools because they're going to lose so much funding because they're part of these taxing districts. Are there other schools that are also going to have to close? And what about the parents? Do they know this, or the teachers? What's been their reactions?
Yeah, so we've been reaching out to these schools, and I don't know if I have the wrong email address or what, but they do interviews sometimes on TV. I've seen news broadcasts with them, but I have not been able to reach them directly, and we are still trying, and we will not stop trying because the parents need to know. And these parents, so these kids that go to these schools that are very rural schools, you know, sometimes those kids, they get two meals a day and they're both served at school. And that's a real thing.
Yeah.
And so these parents are working their butts off out there trying to make ends meet. And now we're going to shut down the forest around them again. So it's a perpetual cycle. It results in the same over and over and over again. We know the outcome of this. So what we need to do, what the Board of Forestry needs to do is pull back on this HCP that they've created with these horrendously reduced timber harvest levels, redo another HCP, which will take probably a year or two, but it will save Oregon in the long run, and have the timber harvest levels at or more than what is current.
Yeah.
That's the only way that we're going to get through this.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there, come back. We're going to continue some of these stories that Jennifer has in terms of the impact of this plan, this nonsensical plan. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking with Jennifer Hammaker about Oregon's disastrous new plan to save the forest and save the habitat. But like so many leftist plans, it will destroy rather than protect. Her family for generations has been in natural resources, timber, and commercial fishing, and she is the president of Oregon Natural Resources Industries. Find out more about them by heading to onri.us, onri.us, and what you can do to help, like drop them a donation as they fight to protect Oregon's natural resources and the people and industries who work in them. And if you're just joining us, Oregon has a new scheme to take more forests out of protection, out of production, under the guise of a habitat conservation plan that's going to take over 640,000 acres out of production, not to mention killing jobs directly and indirectly. And you had mentioned going out of that break that we really need to just pull back from the cliff here and redo this plan. As far as the timing on that, what are you looking at? Like a couple of years type thing to come up with a new plan and move that forward?
Well, so the Board of Forestry's next meeting and final meeting before they're supposed to vote on whether to accept or reject this HCP is June 7th in Sisters, Oregon. If you care about our Oregon forests, please be there. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. June 7th, Sisters, Oregon. So the Board of Forestry is also supposed to be voting on, they have it on their timeline, in September on whether to accept or reject the HCP. I'm hoping that they have a couple things behind closed doors right now. The adaptive management plan, which has never worked in any case. Even the Board of Forestry knows that. Liz Agapo, who is one of the members on the Board of Forestry, used to be a forester, and she, I think U.S. Fish and, or U.S. Forester, and she said, I've never seen an adaptive management plan that has worked.
Mm.
So they know these things don't work. What adaptive management plan is supposed to, if they see something happening, that they can pivot and change that thing within the ES or within the HCP. Well, it's never happened. So, or it has happened, but it hasn't been effective. Anyway, so they've done that. They're doing that right now behind closed doors. We don't know what it says. We don't know what their new projections are. They were supposed to go back to the table and rework some modeling. So if you put garbage numbers in, you're going to get garbage
yep.
numbers out. And that's what they did.
Yep.
They did that over and over and over again, and we have been diligent, and so has a ton of other people been diligent at pointing those inaccuracies out. So they were supposed to go back to the drawing board and put better garbage in and hopefully get better garbage out. But we haven't seen those. We don't know. ODF put out back in February that there's going to be a 34% additional reduction in timber harvest on state lands because of this HCP, after we already knew that it was going to devastate rural Oregon, rural counties that depend on this timber harvest revenue. Now it's going to be an additional 34% on top of that. So that is alarming.
Oh yeah.
And ODF and the Board of Forestry should really take a hard look at that. Right now, back in December, Carla Chambers, who sits on the Board of Forestry, said, hey, you guys, we have one, we're working off of 1 month cash flow right now. Okay. We have a loan out, an e-loan out, which we owe big bucks on. I think it's a $50 million loan. They have a 6% inflation. They have a 7% increase in PERS. They have spiraling out of control upwards fire costs of $111 million a year. And the private forest accord makes it so that they're not going to have so much timber harvest. The 1 million acres that were burned up in the Labor Day fires, you can't harvest those anymore. And the and now this HCP, which is half of the state forest, is going to be off harvest also.
And which department did you say that she was with? You said
she's on the Board of Forestry.
And that's ODF, Oregon Department of Forestry?
She's on the Board of Forestry, who directs the Department of Forestry.
Wow. This is like
yeah.
watching somebody commit suicide, you know?
It's a train wreck. So what the people need to understand is that not only will this HCP devastate rural communities, the taxing districts, the schools, all this stuff, it also will make ODF itself insolvent. They won't be able to pay their own bills or keep the lights on.
Yeah.
This will take away timber harvest revenue. And ODF, Oregon Department of Forestry, is a unique department in that it sustains itself. It operates off of timber harvest revenue. Well, if there's no timber harvest going on, and there's no revenue.
Well, like I said, this just sounds like somebody is committing suicide. I'm just stunned sitting here listening to this, thinking that this passes as some kind of plan. I mean,
yeah.
Assisted Me suicide, I guess, but that's about as far as it goes.
That's exactly right. That's how we feel. Like we are absolutely astonished that they are continuing to proceed forward with this. And, you know, they have
do you get any sense from them? Do you get any sense from them in terms of if this is essentially killing themselves? Why are they doing this?
Good question. They're doing it so that they can align with the federal government's Endangered Species Act.
You know, I know that there have been a lot of people in the environmental movement that for decades now have wished to do away with state lands and just put it all under federal control. I don't know, maybe
right.
long term that's where they're going with this, but as far as pulling back from the edge, and we're talking funding now, has anybody, because I know this is millions of dollars, has anybody come up with any kind of plan? Is how are you going to replace all of that funding that we get now from these forests?
No, they have not, Mark. And the thing is that you know, Suzanne Weber, who's a senator now over in Tillamook, and Courtney Bangs up in Class Up, and David Yamamoto, who has been pivotal in this whole entire thing. They've been fighting their commissioners, their representatives, their senators, Cyrus Javadi. These people have been front lines educating themselves on this HCP and screaming to the top of their lungs, wait, pump the brakes. and the Board of Forestry just keeps on plowing on forward.
Mm. Well, it just doesn't make any sense at all, because we currently generate funds from these forests. The forests grow back. We are able to generate year after year additional funds. The only solutions then are new taxes and fees.
Well,
I don't see any other options at this point.
That is 100% true. That's the only other option that I can see too. And just to kind of go back it for a second, when you say, you know, we know how to do this sustainably and when we're responsible for our forests and all this kind of stuff, Oregon is the number one lumber, plywood, engineered lumber in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. We're actually the crown jewel of sustainability in the entire world.
Yes.
France sends their people to Oregon to learn how to do it sustainably. We're on the same latitude. So our soil is a lot of like their soil. Our climate is a lot like their climate. We grow the same grapes as they do. They grow the same timber as we do. So they come over here. They send their people to Oregon to learn our forestry so they can go back and make their forests better. They actually have gone from a 4% sustainable to well over 14% sustainable in the last couple of decades because of what they learned in Oregon.
Hmm.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah.
The same thing with Ireland. They are a island out in the middle of nowhere, and they don't have any sustainability there, or they didn't. And they built everything out of aggregate, out of rock, which
yep.
is what they had there.
Yep.
Now they're building forests.
All of those forests in England and Ireland, yeah, totally denuded because they didn't manage those as well. And as we've said, Oregon ought to be leading the world on this. And unfortunately, all we're doing is offshoring all of this timber production to countries who don't care about sustainability. All right, everyone, stay with us. More with Jennifer Hambacher, president of ONRI, talking about Oregon's latest scheme to not use the forests.
You're listening to the I Spy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking with Jennifer Hambacher of ONRI, that's ONRI, Oregon Natural Resources Industry, about their fight to block Oregon Department of Forestry's HCP scheme, a habitat conservation plan, which will take some 640,000 acres offline for over 70 years. And Jennifer, I'd like to, you had touched on this earlier about the June 7th meeting. I'd like to have you walk us through again that timeline in terms of fighting this, because I know June 7th is the big meeting, and then there's another deadline there in September, but also what you're doing to stop this. So in terms of getting people there to that June 7th meeting, have you like looked at getting buses and stuff going, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yes. So we have been organizing a campaign to bring awareness around the June 7th meeting to get as many people there as possible. We have also been, part of our campaign is to get as many petitions that oppose or that want to stop the HCP from happening signed. You can go to OregonStrongerTogether.com and sign the petition. We have flyers that we can send out to you also if you want to email me directly or go to ONRI.us. You can contact me there too. But yes, we have a campaign going. We have a strategy to try to get the Board of Forestry's attention to educate the people on the benefits of forest management, what the HCP is, and what the consequences of the HCP will do. We just don't believe that people are aware of this. So the general public are not aware of this. The people that are fighting it are extremely aware of it. And so it's about getting the word out. And I appreciate you so much interviewing me about this topic, because that's what we're trying to do here, is get the word out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the September deadline, is that when the ODF makes its final plan, you know, having pulled everything together?
Yes. So they are on their timeline, on their website, it literally says that in September, they're supposed to be voting as a board to either accept or reject the HCP. And then what they're also doing at the same time is they've directed Oregon Department of Forestry to create a brand new forest management plan. And that forest management plan is aligning itself with the HCP, meaning that all state forests are under a forest management plan. If over half of the state forests have an HCP on them, which restricts harvest and protects wildlife, then their FMP, their forest management plan, will align with that.
And to be clear, is that the forest management plan, the FMP, is that also happening in September, or is that further down the road and September is just about the final yay or nay on the HCP?
It's the final yay or nay on the HCP. The forest management plan is supposed to be created and completed by 2026.
Okay. So in terms of stopping this, have you considered litigation to stop this? Is that even an option at this point?
Yes, it is. And I can't really talk about that.
Okay. You know, we are, of course, stronger together. Are there other coalitions out there? I'm thinking like the Cattlemen's Association, who can weigh in and help, and have they? And if not, why not?
So the Cattlemen's Association, you know, I don't think would they have a lot of people, but I don't know if they would be, you know, for, I'm sure that they'd be against this. However, I'm not going to speak for them. The Oregon Farm Bureau, however, does cover timber because it's a crop. Oregon Farm Bureau, you know, covers crops and agriculture and all that kind of stuff. Timber is a part of that. And yes, they have been involved in this, as well as other organizations out there have been involved in this. So, but what's unique about ONRI is that we are not, we don't have to answer to anybody, and which is a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because we can say the truth. Hmm. We can put out there exactly what the truth is, and we're untouchable. You can't take away our jobs because we're not working for this. It's not my livelihood that's on the line. It's their livelihood that's on the line.
Right, right.
So they can't threaten me. They can't buy me. They can't buy ONRI. They can't threaten ONRI. And so we kind of can say what's really going on. Whereas some of these other organizations are working with legislators, working with ODF, working with the Board of Forestry, trying to get them correct and accurate information here. This is what the modeling should be. This is what the numbers should be. All this kind of stuff so they're more accurate, so the projections and modeling are more accurate. However, they don't want to rock the boat with them because they walk that thin line. If they go out there in a timber harvest and ODF is mad at them because maybe they said something they weren't supposed to, maybe they would get in trouble.
Hmm.
And well, so, you know...
in terms of the Cattlemen's Association, I would think this would be of interest to them because a couple of years ago, ranchers and farmers in Central Oregon were fighting their own habitat conservation plan, mm-hmm. which had blocked them from getting access to water that they had access to for decades and decades. And I wasn't mm-hmm. able to get down that rabbit trail very far, but do you know anything about that particular fight in terms of fighting the HCP and whether or not they were successful?
No, they were not successful. They continue to have their grazing lands and cattle country shut down. A judge just upheld an HCP that closes down 22,000 acres over there in eastern Oregon. And the reason why they keep it closed down is so they can study sage grouse.
Wow.
So I totally understand what you're saying with the Cattlemen's Association. And yes, they have an HCP over there. Eastern Oregon has an HCP because of the spotted frog. So there are people that are getting together federally and inside the state to alert the government that the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, is being abused, and it continues to be abused, not for the benefit of the frog or us.
Yeah, you know, this just, to hear you talk about these other organizations not weighing in, it just reminds me of that pastor there back in World War II who said, you know, they first came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I was not a Jew. And then they came for the Catholics, right. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Catholic. And then eventually they came for me. And I think that's right. What we have to remember here is that we have to band together to stop this. All right, everyone stay with us. We're going to come in our final segment here with Jennifer Hammaker of ONRI, O-N-R-I. You can find out more at onri.us. Stay with us. In our final segment now with Jennifer Hammaker. She's the president of ONRI, O-N-R-I, which stands for Oregon Natural Resources Industries, an organization that stands for the jobs and the people who work in Oregon natural resource industries, farming, timber, fishing, mining, you know, all the industries humanity depends on and literally could not live without. Got a home? Thank a logger. And so, Jen, in the time that we have left, I'd like to get your reaction to the following. This is testimony by Karen Bud Phelan back in July 2014 to the House Committee on Natural Resources in a hearing titled Threats, Intimidation, and Bullying by Federal Land Managing Agencies. And she says this, quote, "But this system outlined in the Bill of Rights, where power is to be based in the people, is broken. And so the checks and balances so carefully and skillfully comprised in the Constitution are broken. What we have now is a system that bars citizens from litigating against individual federal employees in court for abuses of power. And what we really have turned this into is that an unelected, all-powerful, and unaccountable bureaucracy has set up a dictatorship over some of the private citizens who actually employ them. This bureaucratic power is wielded simply by some bureaucrats who use the power of federal regulations and the color of their office to take private property and private property rights. And because private citizens are barred from bringing their claims in the courts, we are powerless to stop this." So what's your reaction to that? Is that where you think we are now when it comes to natural resources, that we have these individual bureaucrats that are just running everything and there's nothing we can do?
I think she's absolutely correct, and it makes me want to cry because it is what we run into over and over and over again. It's one thing to fight legislation. You know, there's a due process and everything, and to get the word out, and people are paying attention because it's during a session. But when it's a bureaucracy, if it's a DEQ, if it's the Oregon Department of Forestry, if it's, you know, agriculture, fish and wildlife, whatever, unless you go to their website, how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know what they're doing? Unless you're part of that, you know, group, how do you know that they're regulating, you know, they're shutting down crabbing season? How do you know they're shutting down crabbing season for a toxin that they've measured that's 100 times more than what's okay in California, and they're still open?
Yeah.
You know, how do you fight a bureaucracy? They're not accountable to the citizens. They're not accountable to reelection. They're accountable to whoever is running that state.
Yeah. And I think Karen does a great job pointing out that they're not individually accountable. And that's the biggest problem. How do you hold these people responsible for making absolutely terrible decisions? Blow through $1 billion of taxpayer dollars. So what? You know, it's just another day at work there. In terms
of their money.
Yeah, exactly right. Speaking of money, one of the things that we didn't cover that I think we ought to, you had mentioned last week that Stimson, Ferreras, and I forget the other one, Hampton, I think it was, they are all going to be forced to close. That's what they've said, is if this goes through. Do you have a sense of how many jobs that is that would be lost, and how many millions of dollars of economic activity does that represent?
Well, actually, I have not said that they were going to close down. They have said in testimonies and stuff like that they will have to drastically reduce their, when you don't have timber coming in, and these mills that you just mentioned, if they don't have timber coming in, then what are they to do?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you own a bake shop and you don't have any flour, you're not going to be baking any bread.
No.
I don't know what they're going to do. I wish them all the luck in the world. I know that they are extremely concerned with this HCP, and they are amazing, generational, family-owned businesses, and I love them. They do right by their people. They employ hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And so one of the things that the ODF, or Oregon Department of Forestry, put in some of their projections is that they account for 2 to 3 jobs per million board feet harvested. Well, it's not true. If you're going to bid on a piece of property or a piece of timberland to harvest, from a mill point of view, from a logging point of view, from a contractor point of view, they go in and they use between 11 and 13 people per million board feet. So the projection said, oh, we're only going to lose like 2,000 people. It's way off. It's way off. So there's going to be thousands of people that are directly impacted by this HCP. And you and I both know that when you live in a little community and that tax revenue from those paychecks go into your community, not only are you losing the revenue from the timber harvest, but you're also losing family raised wage job revenue.
Yep, absolutely right. So how do we solve this? On the one side, people want to protect forests, but don't understand that a hands-off approach does not protect forests like they think it does.
Right.
Forests need to be managed just like your lawn and garden needs to be managed. And then there are people who do understand that and make their livelihoods from the forest, and they continue to have livelihoods because they keep those forests going. So instead of an onerous HCP, what should we be doing instead? I mean, what other answers or compromises have you or others put forward?
Yes. So the David Yamamoto is the chair of the Forest Trust Land Council. And they are supposed to be working with the Board of Forestry under law and with ODF to create this HCP. So they have put in their own, you know, recommendations. It's called an alternative. They put in their own alternative, and it was never incorporated into the HCP. Nobody even got a look at it.
Hmm.
So the Board of Forestry might have got it, but I don't know if it went past that, because it actually keeps harvest levels at the same sustainable rate as they are right now on state lands, but it also creates these habitat conservation areas and these riparian conservation areas to support, protect, and defend these areas that need to be set aside for habitat. So they have a great strategy, a great HCP. Not that I want an HCP at all, because people need to understand we have the Private Forests Act, which was made back in 1971, and it covers all this stuff.
Yeah.
We already can't do all this stuff.
It sounds like there are other solutions out there, and the fact that they're going hell-bent on this particular plan really makes me question their motives. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And also, if anybody out there wants to help us with this, we're a nonprofit. We don't get paid. I'm a volunteer. My entire board is a volunteer. We have many volunteers out there. But if you would like to donate to help us with our efforts, you can go to ornery.us, go to the shop, and you can donate there. You can go to OregonStrongerTogether.com. There are links there to our ornery site where you can donate also. And we would very much appreciate it. And also sign the petition.
Absolutely. Please do donate to help them out. This is not like the left's so-called nonprofits, defenders of this or friends of those, which have millions at their disposal. I think when the left says nonprofit, what they really mean is stopping other people from making profits. But I digress. ONRI is a genuine nonprofit, and they are trying to raise funds to buy airtime on radio and TV and digital. $20, $50 or more will help them buy an ad or two. Some websites looking for support say, buy me a coffee. Think of this as buying them an ad, and what's really cool is that ad you help them buy can be heard by thousands of people. So be sure to help them out. Do sign that petition. It literally takes 30 seconds to do so. Go to OregonStrongerTogether.com, OregonStrongerTogether.com. At the top of the page, you'll see HCP petition. Go there. Fill out the simple form with your name and address. That's it. Don't sit there and complain how bad things are when you can do something. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.